thing. So, last week we looked at 3G systems, and specifically we looked at the evolution of 2G systems, such as GSM, to support the 3G specifications. And those would be essentially higher data rates, more data-centric handling of packets, or more packet-centric handling of data, I should say, and support for multimedia-type processes. We will continue our sort of discussion of evolution today, looking at 4G, and the objectives of 4G could pretty much be characterized as bigger and better. So if we look at the data rates, we want between 100 megabits per second at high speeds and a gigabit per second not moving. Then that's up to those sorts of speeds. We want to be able to hand over across heterogeneous networks, so users should be able to move from WiMAX coverage to Wi-Fi coverage to cellular coverage without worrying too much about it. We want roaming across multiple networks, so we want users to be able to hook up wherever they are. We want support for multimedia data services, so you're going to need sort of quality of service support. We want an all IP core network, so putting data at the center as opposed to circuit switched voice, and ideally interoperability with between all different wireless standards. Now, the ITU, again, is responsible for the specification and certification of 4G standards. Their 4G specification is called IMTS Advanced. And as with 3G, then, we have various proposed standards that are certified to meet the IMTS Advanced specifications. So one of the cores to 4G is this high data rate, and these data rates are achieved by a number of different technologies than we've seen before. The multiplexing standard, by and large, now is orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. So that's going to, it's another spread spectrum technique. It's going to replace the CDMA that was used previously. And we'll have a look at how that works in just a minute. The other core technology for 4G implementations is MIMO, stands for Multiple Input, Multiple Output, and that's smart antenna technology. And so it's using multiple antennas at both the sender, potentially at both sender and receiver, to improve spectral efficiency. And then there's a lot of other additional techniques, improved error correction and forward error correction, scheduling, which is going to support quality of service, and link adaptation, so adaptation of modulation and error correcting codes based on the link quality to always try and maintain the highest data rate possible while not introducing too many errors. So, in evolutionary terms, 3GPP and 3GPP2 worked to extend their 3G standards to 4G standards. And in this vein, 3GPP proposed long-term evolution. And 3GPP2 proposed evolution data optimized, but dropped this in favor of LTE. Now, LTE standards are not completely satisfying the 4G requirements. A lot of times their market is 3.99G, so they don't have quite the data rates, but they're a lot better than the old GSM. And so 3GPP has further improved its standards with LTE Advanced, and that's standardized in release 10 and relies on sort of more enhancements to the physical layer to get the performance required. Okay, and this is certified as being compliant with IMTS Advanced. And so that represents the sort of evolutionary side, which will take us from what we've seen with GSM up to a 4G cellular network. Now, just in case that wasn't complicated enough, we're going to throw another standard into the mix, the Wireless MAN Advanced standard. And this is standardized in 802.16m, so part of the IEEE standard family of suite of standards, and is sort of the latest, the most up-to-date version of WiMAX. Okay, and it has also been certified as being IMTS Advanced compliant. So what we have is the new technologies, OFDM and MIMO, and both LTE Advanced and Wireless MAN Advanced make use of these new technologies. WiMAX would have been the first to propose it, and then it would later have been adopted by the 3GPP. And so what we'll do today is have a look at OFDM and MIMO and see how those technologies work. And then we'll have a look at sort of how that plays into the two standards, LTE and LTE Advanced, so the evolution of GSM and the sort of cellular telephony world, and then WiMAX 802.16m, which came from the sort of IEEE wireless networks, so wireless data networks side of the world, but has nevertheless grown into a competitor for mobile cellular technology. So the first topic we're going to look at is orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. And this represents another way of producing a spread spectrum symbol representation, but being able to do it within a relatively confined spectral band. So, again, somehow allowing multiple carriers to share the same same spectrum. Okay. Now, the idea behind it is that it's a multi-carrier modulation technique, and so in the first instance, we think of having a bit stream, and we divide that stream into a number of parallel lower rate streams and modulate each stream onto a separate carrier frequency. Okay. And the benefit of this is that the lower bit rate streams have a higher bit time and therefore are less subject to inter-symbol interference. So particularly if you have, say, multipath, then you're going to have to, if you have a very high bit rate, you're more likely to be delayed and have the symbols overlapping. If they're of longer duration, then the overlap is not as pronounced. Okay. And so the subcarrier modulation is done in a clever way that does away with the need to have non-overlapping channels. And it does that by selecting subcarriers that are orthogonal to each other over the duration of a bit. Okay. And as before, what orthogonality means is that we can recover one symbol amongst many, one signal amongst many. And what we see is that the way OFDM modulates the symbols, we can pack the subcarriers more tightly together without interference from the adjacent subcarriers. And so if we look at our picture, we have a number of subcarriers, and if we look at the peak of each of those carriers where we would want to sort of distinguish our symbol, then where one carrier is at its peak, the others are at zero. So again, they're not interfering with the signal. Okay, so again, this gives us a bandwidth saving. We're able to pack more subcarriers into the same given bandwidth because they actually overlap in range, but sort of at the important points, they don't interfere with each other. So just to see where this comes from, we look at a pulse and think about what the Fourier transform of a pulse would be. Okay. And we see that we get this sync function, and so it has its peak at zero, and then it intersects with the x-axis at periodic points, pi over t, where t is the width of, related to the width of the pulse. And so we get this shape that we saw before that we thought was in some way good. Now, what we do then to, so we have this pulse, what we do then to produce our multiple subcarriers is that we modulate that pulse at a single frequency tone, FC. Okay. And if we, and what that does, well, every time you sort of modulate by FC, you're producing a shift in the frequency response by omega equals 2 pi FC. And so if we're clever about how we pick FC, we can arrange it so that the peak of one symbol is at the trough, or not the trough, but the zero point of the other symbols. Okay. And in particular, what we want to do is we want to pick FC to be multiples of 1 over T. Okay, and so that's the signal that we're going to send. It's a pulse modulated by a single frequency tone. And so these signals have an orthogonality property in that we can recover any given one of the symbols. And so we see if you modulate again according to the same frequency tone, that if you have the initial, so your symbol is sort of a combination of all these frequency tone combinations, so sort of shifted along each of the frequencies. If you reapply your single tone, then again, when you integrate that out, you see that you recover your initial symbol, but not the additional symbols. So we've seen that this form of modulation has a number of nice properties. It's orthogonal in that we can recover our initial symbol. It allows us to pack our spectrum fairly tightly. And so it has nice properties. Now, from a technical point of view, it has other properties which are desirable. The transmission will have a finite number of tones overall, and hence can be represented using a finite number of Fourier coefficients. And what this means for us is that we can use a discrete Fourier transform representation of the symbol, and then this can be generated and recovered using inverse fast Fourier transforms, which are easy to implement in hardware. So again, the bottom line is that they're very bandwidth. These OFDM is very bandwidth efficient, and it's relatively easy to implement. Okay, so the story is slightly more complicated than that, in that we do have to account for inter-symbol interference, and in order to do that, we add what's called a cyclic prefix, which is essentially a guard time, onto our symbol, and this guard interval allows us to avoid the interference. So, as an example, if we have a 1,000-tone system with a 1 megabit per second data stream, So the bit duration is 1 microsecond. We can convert that then into So we can convert that to 1,000 data streams, I should say, with a rate of 1 kilobit per second, which would give us a bit duration of 1 millisecond. And we can add a guard time of 1/8 of a symbol duration, which is 125 microseconds. And the interference is avoided if the multipath spreading time is less than this guard time, and that would work out at about 37.5 kilometers difference in path lengths. So you can get sort of a good resistance to the multipath spreading effect. Okay, so that's one use, is to send high data rate bit streams, but we will note right now that all OFDM is doing is dividing the spectrum into orthogonal subchannels. So there is no reason that those subchannels all have to be used by a single user. These subchannels can also be assigned to different users. Now, obviously, there's a bit rate issue, but they can be, you can assign them to whatever user you want. And so, orthogonal frequency division multiple access refers to the use of the OFDM subchannels by different users. And again, this will be important in sort of sharing spectrum amongst multiple users. Okay, so that's all I'm going to say about OFDM. It's again represents an efficient use of the bandwidth spectrum, and is sort of the currently accepted best technique for producing high data rates within wireless systems. The second technology that is used is MIMO. And MIMO stands for multiple input, multiple output, and it's a radio communication technology whereby multiple antennas at the transmitter and or the receiver are used to improve communication performance. And it should be noted that input and output refers to the radio channel. And so what you have is, and it's sort of an interesting concept, you have multiple inputs to the same radio channel. So we've thought of, to date, a channel as being something that can't be shared, but with MIMO, you actually can share a channel amongst multiple communications. MIMO relies on the presence of multipath, and it's frequently used in conjunction with OFDM. So, just to put what MIMO is trying to do in context, it's a form of what's called diversity. And so, diversity refers to changing some aspect of signaling to try and improve data quality. And we sort of can categorize that as according to what aspects can be changed. We have time diversity, and with time diversity, a message can be transmitted at different times or with channel coding, so you have a redundancy built into the message. Okay. You have frequency diversity, and so you can transmit the signal along different frequencies. So you can use multiple channels, you can use spread spectrum techniques. And finally, you have space diversity. And here we use antennas at different positions to take advantage of different radio paths. And so the idea is that even if you're sending signal on two different antennas, they will travel along two different paths. And if we're clever about that, then we can use that to our advantage. And so MIMO, with its multiple antennas, again, is based on the concept of space diversity. So creating signals that travel along slightly different paths, and then distinguishing the signals according to their path. Okay. Within cellular systems, or wireless systems in general, there's a number of uses to which MIMO can be put. And the big categories are spatial diversity. And with spatial diversity, we transmit the same data through multiple antennas over the same channel. And that's sort of a key concept to understand, is that this is happening over the same channel. So you're sending two signals on the same channel and looking for an improvement according to that. Okay. Now, with spatial diversity, we're sending the same data. It's traveling along separate paths, different paths. And the idea is that if we have some understanding of the characteristics of the paths, instead of having a multipath effect where we're weakening the signal, if we incorporate the appropriate phase and gain to our signals, then we can have the received signals combining to increase in overall power as opposed to decrease. And so that's going to improve your signal-to-noise ratio. It requires that the transmitter have channel state information so that it knows how to modify its signals to produce this sort of overall gain as opposed to an overall loss. Spatial multiplexing refers now to transmitting parallel streams of data over the same channel. So, with spatial diversity, we sent the same data two different ways over the same channel, but you can see that sort of isn't too unreasonable. What's interesting is spatial multiplexing, where we send different data over the same channel. In this case, the receiver has to rely on being able to distinguish according to the spatial signature, or the path that the data took, in order to differentiate between the two streams. And so there are various flavors of this that can be done with or without transmitter channel knowledge. And what happens now is that we increase the throughput on the channel. So if we think about Shannon's capacity theorem, that says there's a maximum throughput, and then within that there's some sort of achievable throughput level. If you have multiple parallel streams now, in theory, you can increase that throughput by however many streams you have. So essentially each path now is another way of subdividing our channels. And so if we have these subdivided channels, of course, we can either use this all for one user, or we can make those channels available to multiple users. In the uplink direction, essentially you just take the single user concept and you broaden it to accommodate multiple users. So all of the work is going to be done at the base station receiving the data, and it needs to, again, distinguish between the different paths. But since the base station has relatively high processing power, that's not as difficult. In the downlink direction, the user equipment would have to distinguish between multiple signals, and this is a more difficult task, again, given the processing power and the sort of power expenditure that desirable for the user equipment, and is usually done in a much more limited fashion. So, again, MIMO requires multiple antennas at either the sender or receiver, but we can classify MIMO modes according to where those antennas are, with sort of the degenerate case being SISO, single input, single output, so it's only having one antenna at sender and receiver. And so that produces your standard radio link, which has the advantage of being simple, but it does not introduce any sort of diversity, and is subject to all the effects of the radio channels that we've discussed so far, so fading along certain frequencies, and a capacity limitation according to the Shannon capacity theorem. Our second mode is single input, multiple output, so multiple antennas at the receiver. And this can be used to combat fade. So assuming that you have multipath going on, so that there will be even if one signal is transmitted, there are multiple signals arriving at the receiver, then the receiver can use these multiple signals to try and arrive at the best possible recovery for the original signal. And this can be done in one of two modes. You can have switched diversity SIMO, in which case the receiver just looks for the strongest signal and switches to that antenna, whichever antenna is receiving the signal better. Or you can take a combination of all received signals. This is still relatively simple, but there is now processing required at the receiver. And if the receiver's the handset side, then that the amount of processing that it's able to do or is willing to do, sort of as a power expenditure, can be limited. And finally, we have full MIMO, so we have multiple antennas on both sender and receiver. And so This can be used either to provide channel robustness or to increase throughput, but it's going to require processing at both the transmitter and the receiver. So frequently, the space and time diversity are combined to try and optimize signaling. And this is done using space-time coding. And we give you one example here, which is a space-time block code. And here, multiple copies of a data stream are transmitted across a number of antennas at different times. And so if what is transmitted through one antenna at a given time is not good enough, then it can be combined with what's transmitted through another antenna at a different time. And so by using the two sort of options available, you hope that you at some point hit a good combination. Okay. This is a form of redundancy coding, so you are transmitting your bits multiple times. And the code is typically represented as a matrix. So you have the row represents the time slot, and the column represents the antenna. And SIJ is the symbol that's transmitted in time slot I from antenna J then. So, again, one of the more interesting applications of having these multiple antennas is spatial multiplexing. And here, again, a single frequency channel, so one of our OFDM tones, one of our OFDM subchannels, can be further subdivided into subchannels, and the receiver has to be able then to distinguish the data according to the path along which the data traveled. Okay, and so now in theory, you have a single channel, and again, it's now supporting multiple data streams. So we should be able to increase our capacity linearly with the number of subchannels that we have. Now, this is fairly complicated how it works in practice, but we're going to just sort of sketch out the basic idea of how it works here. And so at the transmitter, we have M data streams, and each data stream is going to arrive at each of the, that should be receivers, via a slightly different path. And so we use HIJ to denote the path, the path characteristics along which data stream I arrives at antenna J. So the signal received at antenna J is a combination of all of the transmitted signals T1 through TM. And so what we need to do then is take all of our received signals, so R1 through Rn, and somehow pick out the bits that are associated with a given transmission, TI. In matrix form, we can look at this as our received signal is our channel characteristics times our transmitted signals. And roughly the idea is that if we invert our matrix H, so of channel, our matrix of channel characteristics, then we can recover our symbol T, or sorry, our signals T. So that's the basic idea of how this works. Now, in reality, it's a bit more complicated. First of all, we have a noise component to our signal, and so we need to use a bit more sophisticated technique to try and recover the signal. Secondly, each variable is part of an ongoing data stream, so we have to account for that. And typically, we need to combine this with some form of encoding to improve the signal reception. But still, yeah, you can see that you can sort of see the basic idea of how we can recover the signal, our different signals. Now, again, we can just view this as another way of producing subchannels. So we had our frequency channel, and again, what we're concerned about with our frequency channels is the bandwidth efficiency, so how many bits can we squeeze into that, and if we can subdivide them as long according to these paths, we can increase the number of the bit rate that we can squeeze into a certain bandwidth by the number of paths. Okay, now there's nothing that says that these subchannels have to be used by one or multiple users. So, again, you can allocate the subchannels however you want. Now, there are, again, issues with processing power and distinguishing between these channels. In the uplink direction, the receiver requires, so the base station requires channel state information, but the transmitter, in this case the user equipment, doesn't. They can just transmit as normal. And so all of the complexity in this case is at the receiver end, and this is considered to be relatively easy to handle. In the downlink direction, it's more complicated. And the transmitter needs to encode the data in a way that the receivers can distinguish the data. And one of the more common techniques to do this is dirty paper coding. And in this case, the properties of the channel interference are used to encode the data. And so each channel to a given user would have different characteristics, and the transmitter uses those characteristics to allow the receiver to distinguish the encoded data. And sort of just as an analogy, it's like writing on dirty paper. If you had clean paper, you would use black ink and you'd be able to see it. If you have dirty paper, then you would use white ink to be able to distinguish it. So again, the dirt is the noise, and the transmitter encodes the data so that if it's transmitted along the noisy channel, it's distinguishable. If it's transmitted along a channel with different noise characteristics, then it's not distinguishable. So, those are the two key technological advances that are used by 4G systems to try and improve data rates. And so for the remainder of the lecture, after a short break, we will look at our two competing standards, and these are the 3GPP standards of LTE and LTE Advanced. And again, those can be viewed in this evolutionary step from GSM to UMTS to LTE. And then the WiMAX / Wireless MAN Advanced / 802.16 standard, which again probably were the first adopters of the technology and have been concentrated. It's a point-to-point broadband connection standard, and so it has been always focused on, again, maximizing point-to-point data rates, but has sort of adapted itself sufficiently to satisfy sort of the mobile cellular specifications as well. So we'll have a look at those two different standards in a minute.